This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're talking about the ketogenic diet and specifically its application to cancer. The book, Keto for Cancer, just out this week. And I'll start this segment by sharing this story with you, Miriam. Recently, the EMA, which is the European Medicine Agency, which is the equivalent of the FDA, but it covers all the countries of Europe because they have kind of an EU thing where they have a common European Medicine Agency. According to a British Medical Journal study, they looked at a lot of these new pricey, very sophisticated, molecularly targeted medications that have been released since 2009, and they reviewed their efficacy and they reviewed their potential for either extending life or improving life. And what they concluded was that only 51% improved quality of life or survival, but only marginally, and 49% remained uncertain. And their final conclusion, and I'm quoting, is that there's still no conclusive evidence that these very pricey drugs, some costing hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, either extended life or improved life. In many cases, they were proved on the basis that they could extend life for maybe a couple of months. So,
That's it.
I mean, we're very hopeful about breakthroughs in cancer, and I'm really am encouraged by some of the research that's, you know, with these amazing molecular medicine approaches and genetic typing and so on. But we're still not reaching our target in terms of reducing cancer mortality.
Yeah, I have some insight into that, and that is if you just use glioblastoma as an example, within a glioblastoma, when they do a biopsy or a pathology on a resected tumor, they will identify 40, 50, 60 different mutations within that tumor.
Yep.
Okay, this is not uncommon.
And I've seen that with some cancer patients, as they say, well, you have these, 12 different mutations, so guess which ones we're going to target. I mean, it's kind of like throwing darts at a dartboard.
Right, and so if they target one pathway with a drug, what's to stop the ones that don't express that pathway from continuing to grow? So it's like whack-a-mole in a way. They're just kind of knocking some down.
That's a good analogy.
But they're not going after the underlying cause. And the underlying cause is the dysregulated mitochondrial metabolism. Go after that instead of just keep whacking what pops up, because that's not working. And so yes, they can come out with these targeted therapies, and some of them may even approach more than one pathway.
They call this precision medicine, but what we may need
is...
Yeah, what we may need is not the laser-like focus, but we may need just a very broad-based metabolic approach that really...
To bring our bodies back into balance. That's what we need to do.
There you go.
Yeah.
Very good.
Because our immune system is attacking cancer cells that are forming in our bodies all the time. This is going on a regular basis. Mutated cells form, and they don't survive because the immune system wipes them out. So why not do the things that support? Why not add something like ketogenic diet? You said it's challenging, and that's one of the reasons, one of the many reasons that I wrote this book. One thing that I emphasize to people is you can make it as challenging as you want, or you can simplify it down to just, it's protein, carbs, and fat. You're just eating food. But you're going to be eating a different mix, a different blend of foods. Hopefully you're also going to be improving the quality of the foods that you eat. And that's going to be the thing that helps to bring your body back into balance. That's why the quality of life is so good, for people who are following a ketogenic diet. But you have to make that switch in your thinking to like changing your relationship to food, changing, thinking of it as medicine, thinking of it as thinking of it as the potential to change what's going on in your body, instead of thinking of it as, how can I walk by that pastry without buying one?
Mm-hmm. So what does it consist of? Give us an example of the things you can include, but the things that you probably should exclude on this type of diet.
Well, you know, people ask me all the time about my son. And, you know, and I'll tell them, you know, it was a little rough start. He was a child. He really liked his pasta. So, you know, he can't have his pasta. What did we do instead? Well, we made zucchini noodles, or we used spaghetti squash, mm-hmm. and would put a meat sauce on it and sprinkle a little Parmesan on it. And he was happy with this. Instead of making sandwiches for him, we would do sliced meat roll-ups. And again, some people think this is very heavy on animal protein, but when you look at what an ounce of a sliced meat looks like, it's pretty minimal. The biggest challenge really is to get the amount of fat. People understand how to reduce carb. They get it. They need some guidance in how to reduce the protein, because protein in cancer, not diabetes or some other diseases. But
in other words, you don't want to make this a high protein diet for several reasons. First of all, protein is, you know, certain amino acids feed cancer, number one. And number two, protein actually gets converted in the body via something called gluconeogenesis into sugar. So you don't want to make it a low fat, low carb, high protein diet. That's not going to work, right?
Right. Plus, protein, an excess of protein, when I talk about nutrient sensing, tells the body that's like, ooh, we've got enough stuff, we can grow. You know, we can make new cells here because we've got all this raw material to work with, building blocks of amino acids. We don't want to give that message to cancer. So they get the part about lowering the carbs, and, you know, and my book and me personally, when I work with people, help them to understand what size portion of protein is appropriate for them given their circumstances, and that's age, nutrition, you know, health status, what interventions they're doing. All that plays into the amount of protein they need. And then the balance is going to be in the form of fats. And for somebody who is carrying a lot of extra weight, we don't even really need to add a whole lot of fat in the beginning. Just go for it, a couple of months and you know, lose some weight, and that makes that calorie restriction is very potent for all those reasons I stated before and for reasons I state in the book. And that's another area of research that's really exploding.
Right, CR, caloric restriction.
Caloric restriction, daily intermittent fasting, or fasting protocols where you do like 5 days of sort of normal eating and then 2 days where you're minimal intake, mostly fats. There's all different ways to kind of mix this up and to put pressure on cancer cells through diet. And that holds true for other diseases as well. We can put pressure on the disease itself by mimicking fasting. We're not actually fasting. We're just eating a diet that's very low in carb and moderate in protein and high in fat.
So what's included? Non-starchy vegetables, but not a lot of legumes, not a lot of beans. Nuts are permitted, but not any grains. Grains are off the table, just
grains
like
are
in a
out.
Paleo
starchy
diet.
Yeah. Grains are out. Starchy vegetables are out. Like you said, legumes are out, at least in the beginning. And most fruits are also out. And whole fat, people think whole fat dairy like milk is okay, but it's not.
Mm-hmm.
If you're using some high fat dairy, if you don't have an estrogen sensitive cancer and you want to use high fat dairy like butter and cream and ghee, that's fine.
Maybe not for prostate cancer or for breast cancer, so on.
Yeah, I'm very careful about that. There's not the science to back up my belief.
Yeah.
But we do
know
that there are
concern. Yeah.
Metabolites. Yes, yep. It's a theoretical concern because there are estrogen metabolites in dairy cows, mm-hmm. and in even not as much in goat or sheep as there is in dairy cows.
So where's the fat going to come from?
The fat is going to come from nuts and seeds. Fat is going to come from like a fatty food, like a fatty fish or lamb. Avocados are high in fat. Mm-hmm. And then good quality fats like avocado oil, if you can source good olive oil, coconut oil, and then it's the more refined version of it, which is MCT oil. Mm-hmm. It's very important. Yeah. I shouldn't call it more refined. It's that gives people the impression it's been treated with solvents, but it mm-hmm. hasn't been. Mm-hmm. So that's where you're going to get your fats from.
How do you use MCT oil in like a shake or something? Because it's not going to be in a salad dressing necessarily. It's sort of a bland, flavorless oil.
Yeah, it's bland, flavorless, so you can combine it with other oils. So you can make sauces, salad dressings, dips. Mm, okay. You can bake it into some things, or you could just take it right off the spoon, or you can do that whole bulletproof model. And, you know, probably a lot of your listeners have heard of bulletproof coffee.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if they haven't, they can look into it. But that's a prime place to put some MCT oil. And I really recommend that to people with cancer, to do that in the morning so that they can
delay. It's a good way to stave off hunger until lunchtime.
Well, on a ketogenic diet, you don't really feel hungry, but
that's true.
You want to do you want to provide those fat calories so that they're continuing to burn fat up until their first meal that might have some carb or protein in it. So bulletproof coffee doesn't have carb or protein in it. It's just the fats.
So let's talk about the hunger aspect, because there is an initial period of carb withdrawal. And it's related to insulin. It's related to brain neurotransmitters. It's kind of like it takes a while to switch gears. The body is it's kind of like in limbo for a while, and it can be quite uncomfortable. What advice do you have for people making the transition?
Well, if people are healthy enough to do a couple of day fast, a 2 to 3 day water only fast, they may want to start there. Or they may want to just start by lowering their carbohydrates to the point where they are ketogenic. So, there's a continuum of things, and a lot of it is based on like motivation and nutrition status, where they're at health-wise. You don't want an older person to be starting with a fast, mm-hmm. because it does, those first few days, you are breaking down some muscle, and we don't want that in an older person or somebody with recent surgery. But once you're in a ketogenic state, then you can fast and you're not breaking down the muscle tissue anymore, or I should say it's minimal amount of breaking down of muscle tissue, because the ketones are actually providing the energy, so your body doesn't need to break down muscle tissue mm-hmm. to get at those amino acids, and like you said, those get used for gluconeogenesis.
Mm-hmm. And so there are certain conditions that you mention in the book are really not suitable for a ketogenic diet. What are some of the limitations where it really should not be undertaken?
Well, there are some hard and fast rules, what they call the absolute contraindications, and those are basically mitochondrial diseases that are genetic in origin and manifest pretty early on in
carnitine
life.
Carnitine disorders,
so, yeah. Right, carnitine and fatty acid oxidation disorders primarily.
And those are rare. But
pyruvate one as well. Mm-hmm. And those are absolute exclusions. When we're looking at most people who are getting cancer, there's what I call, what we call relative contraindications. And those are things like, well, okay, if you don't have a gallbladder, can you do this? Mm-hmm. Well, most people can do this without a gallbladder. Yeah. If you have pancreatitis, you'd be doing this? Probably not. Mm-hmm. So, if you have liver cancer, should you be doing this? Boy, that's what's your liver function look like? Mm-hmm. If your liver is really damaged by the cancer, mm-hmm. then I wouldn't be doing a diet that relies on your liver function. It's not that it's going to damage it, but if you're trying to rely on your liver to maintain glucose homeostasis, And to make ketones, because that's where ketones are made, you're just putting a lot of extra stress on an organ that's mm-hmm. already stressed. So I lay out as much as I can in my book, because there are a lot of these relative contraindications, and some of them are not health-related. Mm-hmm. Some of them are things like just what kind of support do you have? If you're going for treatment, you know, every day or every week and you feel miserable, how able are you going to be to shop for the foods that you need and plan the diet out, you know, make that kind of switch? If you have a caregiver that is not supportive, how mm-hmm. likely are you going to be able to maintain right. this way of eating?
Especially if it's a child or an older person. What about these devices that help you test for ketosis? I remember Atkins used to give people keto sticks. Is that practical, or is there something new under the sun, blood tests, finger sticks, that help people decide if they're really achieving the goal of ketosis?
Yeah. In the first few weeks, people can just use the urine sticks, but I'm very specific, you know, in which brand. And I'll tell you, it's Bayer Keto Sticks. They have a lot more quality control over their product, so it's easier to read the results on that than the ones that are done for weight loss. There's a lot of generics out there for weight loss right now, but I haven't found one that isn't muddy looking. Mm-hmm. That's the easiest thing to do while you're adapting. Some people will get the meters right away that can measure ketones. And there's the one that's kind of the tried and true is the Precision Extra. And the kind of the challenge to that one has been the price of the strips are so high. Mm-hmm. But there's some workarounds now. There's places in Canada and Australia where you can buy the strips for a lot less money. And then there was something just introduced in August, and it's called Keto Mojo. Hmm. And some of my colleagues that have been testing Keto Mojo are saying that it is as accurate as the Precision Extra. Hmm. So that's good to hear coming out of researchers that that you've got this meter. Plus, that one will adjust for hematocrit. It'll adjust glucose okay. readings for hematocrits.
And when you're on such a restrictive diet, is there a need for additional supplementation, certain vitamins and minerals that you might not get adequate amounts of?
Well, honestly, I think most people aren't getting adequate amounts. They just don't know they're getting right. not getting adequate amounts. Right. So you look at things like calcium and magnesium, and yeah, I think people need supplementation with mm-hmm. both. And, you know, I believe in just using a basic multivite to kind of cover your bases if you might not be eating well enough, and just be careful about the forms of the B vitamins. You know, the methylated forms might be better. We don't know if they'll be better, and there's some research that says maybe we shouldn't be supplementing with B vitamins.
Because they're growth factors potentially for the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What are the conditions?
Yeah, so
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I do go into that because there are, you know, things like selenium. People can go overboard with selenium, and there's kind of a sweet spot there. So some people I'm working with will tell me that they're eating 10 or 12 Brazil nuts, and I go, oh, my God, no,
watch out.
Two or
yeah.
three is plenty. Yeah.
That's a lot. Yeah. So and finally, you know, what other conditions can this be good for? Because, you know, we're talking keto for cancer, but they're much broader ramifications of this diet for many other conditions.
Right. So if you look at, I think the clearest evidence to support a change in the basic nutrition guidelines comes from the diseases of insulin resistance. And those are, you know, simply overweight, but obesity, definitely. Type 2 diabetes, definitely. Polycystic ovary syndrome, more evidence is coming in on that. There's some new studies on that which are confirming what the older studies had said. And then if you start to think of some of these neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's as being a type of diabetes, some people are calling it type 3 diabetes because of the problem with insulin as far as neurodegenerative goes. So now when you talk about a challenge, trying to develop a ketogenic diet for somebody who has Alzheimer's is extremely challenging on many, many levels. Caregiver level, the demands of the person with the disease. But if you can cut down on carbohydrate and supplement with one of the new ketone supplements that are out there, I think that ketogenic therapies, these are going to, this combination therapy, is going to be very, very beneficial in halting progression. And some research is showing that it's even reversing the beginnings of the of cognitive decline. So if you look at Dale Bredesen's work, for example, but also Stephen Kinane up in Canada, he's doing some amazing research on ketone supplementation as far as neurodegenerative. And Parkinson's disease, there's a number of people I've worked with who just do a lower carb, not necessarily ketogenic diet, and supplement, are starting to supplement. There's more supplements out there now than there have been in the past.
And what are some, of the supplements? The, you know, there's some that are medical foods for Alzheimer's and for neurodegenerative disease. What are some of those?
The medical food for Alzheimer's disease is basically a form of MCT. So, and that your body converts into ketones quite readily. But it can have some kind of GI effect if consumed in large amounts. Some people have found benefit in Alzheimer's. You'll get Mary Newport and her her husband. She just supplemented with coconut oil, and it improved his function. The newer, sort of the ones that have come out in the last few years are beta-hydroxybutyrate salts. So these are ketone salts. So they're combined with calcium, magnesium, sodium, potassium in different combinations. And they, we don't know how they're going to shake out in terms of diseases.
Those are the short chain, short chain fatty acids as opposed to medium chain, right? The beta-hydroxybutyrate.
Butyrate, so it's actually a ketone. That's the ketone.
Oh, that's
beta-hydroxybutyrate is a ketone. So they take a ketone and they combine it with a salt, and so in the body it just, you just digest it and the ketones go
like sodium,
one way.
Potassium, so, calcium butyrate. I think those supplements are available over the counter.
Yes. We don't know how that's going to work out for cancer, and some of them have ingredients in them that I don't believe are beneficial for cancer, but there's a another whole new class of drugs that I think are going to be more beneficial for neurodegenerative, and those are the esters. Nothing on the market commercially yet, but I would be surprised if we even have to wait 6 months or a year before they start popping up.
Well, you know, maybe that'll be an opportunity for an update. When we have some news on that front. Well, this is most informative. By the way, another relative contraindication is if you are an ethical, dyed-in-the-wool vegan or vegetarian, you might find this difficult. And this is not to impugn
vegetarians. You find it more challenging, but yeah, you can still do it. If you're an ethical, if you're doing a plant-based diet because you think it's healthier and you have cancer, well, it's obviously, it's not working for you. So, you know, just make your food choices easier on yourself and liberalize your diet a little bit. But if you are an ethical vegan, then there are ways to do this diet, mostly as a low-carb rather than a ketogenic diet. But I've seen, I've worked with one woman who, she's small, so she doesn't need a lot of protein, but she's been doing this successfully, managing her brain tumor, glioblastoma, you know, the very deadly form, for 6 years. Hardly anybody gets 6 years out of glioblastoma. And she's vegan. She was vegan. A year ago, she liberalized it to include fish.
Wow. Yeah, would that Senator McCain undertake such a program. I doubt if, you know, with all the attention he's getting from the conventional doctors, that he's going to go astray from the conventional path.
And it's really too bad because, you know, that is, the quality of life is what he's looking for. I think he's very realistic about his prognosis, and he's looking for quality of life, and it would be best if whatever he was doing was combined with a ketogenic diet. At least that's my opinion.
Indeed. All right, so the book is Keto for Cancer, and are there any additional resources that you want to point our listeners to, websites or other sources of information about this?
Well, you mentioned Dominic D'Agostino. I want to say he's one of my mentors too.
Yeah. So recent guest, he's great, of course.
Yeah, and he's got a great Facebook page that he updates a lot, and he does a lot of tweeting. So you can get a lot of good information from him. There are recipes online, but you have to be careful in those resources, because a lot of them are designed for weight loss. Alan Davis has a site, Ketogenic Diet Resources. There's a lot of information across the spectrum there, and pretty solid information. And she has a couple of books on diabetes that I think are outstanding, too. Mm-hmm. She also has a book on cancer, and I think it's a great book when I'm working with an older person or somebody that is overwhelmed by what they feel are the limitations. It's sort of like a workbook, and it simplifies the diet quite a bit. Charlie Foundation, yes, thank you. Yeah. Charlie Foundation has incredible resources, and yes, I do direct people there. They have lists of, hygiene products, what to watch out for in terms of hidden carbohydrates in hygiene products and in supplements. They have links to some videos that are really great. They have a whole recipe section. There's more and more happening with that site every day. Matthew's Friends is the equivalent of that in the UK.
Hmm, great. Well, thank you so much for sharing all this information with us. And, of course, you can do a deep dive on ketogenic diet in the book, Keto for Cancer. It's a great book. It's both, on the one hand, scholarly, but also easy to understand. You know, you put a tremendous amount of information into that book. And I think anybody undertaking this type of diet, you know, it's something that you really want to be informed about. And you don't want to undertake it casually, because it's a challenging path, but it's a path that can confer tremendous benefits.
Yes, and the people that have done it and are committed to it, and it takes a level of commitment to kind of fight back against our poor food environment, really. So you know, people that make that commitment, you'll find out within a couple of months whether it's really working for you and how you feel about continuing with it. And I do believe, I should add that I do believe people should, you know, if it's working for them, they should just stick with it. This dropping in and out of ketosis that might be beneficial for people in sports nutrition or, you know, for other reasons, doesn't really work in cancer.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for joining us, Miriam Kalamian, and the book is Keto for Cancer. I'm Dr.
Thank
Ronald
you.
Hoffman.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.